as we get an expert now in the question of why people pray to help them or help somebody else or help the outcome of a situation, Reverend Phil Blackwell, who was a pastor for many years in Chicago and certainly was a pastor for a while at the First United Methodist Church on Wisconsin Avenue in Madison. Hello, Pastor Blackwell.
Hi, Mitch, how are you?
What is protocol, by the way? Reverend Blackwell? Or?
That takes too long. Phil's okay.
Phil, but I'm just curious. Is it pastor or reverend? Is that the...
In our system, they're interchangeable.
Oh, okay. Well, I like you.
You're the same thing no matter what you call me.
Well, but you're smart and you're a man of faith. You're a believer. But, you've told us, too, that things aren't necessarily as black and white as you might find them on some of those old movies with Elmer Gantry. I mean, there's... Now, let me ask you this. People have been criticizing the phrase, our thoughts and prayers are with the family. And we've had strident pushback in some media circles, mostly on the left. Hey, we need more than prayers. We need legislation. We need action. We need gun control. We need this. Because the people in the church in Texas were already praying, and that didn't do them any good. And to that, you say what?
Well, prayer as a religious concept is really very complex, and there are all sorts of prayers and activities that are assigned the term prayer. But when I look at that political discussion you're referring to, it seems that for some conservatives, prayer is a substitute for doing something. Let's pray. We don't have to do anything else. And for liberals, prayer is an expression of weakness.
Right,
when you're
right.
doing that, you're not doing something else. And
reminded
me of a story that Coretta Scott King said about Martin Luther King at some early point in the Civil Rights Movement, where he was at the kitchen table and he just began to say to the family how weak he felt and vulnerable he felt, and he just sort of lapsed into prayer in a silent way, and then jumped to his feet and went out with a new kind of resolve, which is to say that prayer without action is not a genuine prayer. Sometimes action without at least thoughtfulness, if not prayer, is not terribly good action. So for somebody to say thoughts and prayers and that somehow saves you from having to do something is unfaithful.
Well, but if your son is 9 and he has a 6-inch tumor in his brain, and you're praying in the hospital waiting area while they do surgery, I mean, you really can't do much in the way of action there.
No. But I know, and I have been part of prayers that have said, "Dear Lord, it was Thy will, take care of that tumor," and sometimes things like that happen, but. To see God as a being in our lives who somehow can swoop down and make everything right for us has proven quite often not to be the case, whether it's war or politics or football. I'm offended when I see a pass receiver catch a touchdown pass and in the end zone point a finger up to the sky as if God helped
God
him
did the,
do it.
The play,
yeah. Now if the camera just panned a little to the left, you could probably see the defensive back also pointing a finger to God.
That's true.
God didn't have anything to do
so
with it.
So God
that pass,
screwed
the
other
considered.
Team, right? So
So there's a way in which God is on our side, whether again that's our political belief or our national identity. The power of prayer seems to come at that point when. It's not about words. It's not about asking for certain kinds of favors. It is bringing yourself into connection with or reconciliation with reality and other people. So to pray for your son in that room is very, very important, but it is connecting you to God and you to your son in ways that may prove to be where the real strength comes and may even result in whatever actions result from your identifying that deeply.
Right. Well, I've talked to people who have for years tried to work on me, and they bring me to lunch and they cite various verses. It's been going on for a long time, and sometimes I'm on board, sometimes I'm too much of a doubting Thomas. I wish you all the best if we ever have that lunch. But, you know, it's easier to say, well, I've got the devil over here saying, go ahead and have that chocolate cake, or go ahead and yield to temptation with that 23-year-old intern. And then I have God on the other side saying, oh, no, don't. Be good. Have a glass of milk. Watch the Osmonds. I mean, so you have that choice, right?
Well, that's one way to cast it, Milt.
Well, I'm sorry, but I'm trying to cut to the chase, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm thinking back to Paul Tillich was a theologian about 70 years ago that talked about God not as a being among other beings, you and me among them, but God as the ground of all being, that is the sense of life itself, and that to pray is to connect yourself with life and with the community of people all around. It has nothing to do whether they are of the same church or same faith or no faith, but that we have something in common with everybody, and if we connect with that, then as Paul says in the New Testament, we're to pray without ceasing. He's not saying we should sit in a corner and just sit with our heads down, but that our life and our every action should be prayerful. If that's the case, then when there are shootings, wherever they take place, that requires not only prayers in some kind of spoken or reverential sense, but it also means prayers in terms of action in order to heal and change the things that are wrong in our community.
Well, in the case of the shooting in Texas, the shooter was an avowed atheist, by the way, who apparently said, "Die, mother blank," which didn't put him in a very good place in the Holy See, I don't think.
No, that those are not good opening lines. But I think one of the, I mean, we say, oh well, you know, mental illness. Well, I mean, mental illness is a real problem in every developed country, no more so here than other places. But to work and deal with the mentally ill is, in fact, can be a prayerful act if you can identify enough with people. Now, you're not going to when they walk in with a gun.
Right.
But here's somebody who had a whole history of needs that went unmet.
I mean,
unmet by the institutions that were involved. Now I can't say that he would have been deterred 5 years ago or 2 years ago, but we cannot simply excommunicate him from the human experience when in fact we pretty well know some of the feelings he might have had.
That's right. Everybody's had a bad day where they cut somebody off at on the interstate, or they got the wrong bill because they made a mistake at the restaurant. It was a lower bill, and somebody decided to go, I'll go ahead and pay the lower one. I mean, there's degrees less than just shooting and killing, dozens of people, right, Pastor?
Yeah. I think there is an issue around guns that needs to be addressed, no matter who's able and willing or who's afraid of it. But it seems to me that after Sandy Hook, when, what was it, 20 first graders were murdered, and we did nothing, it became clear that nationally our vote was in, that we cherish our guns more than we cherish our children.
Well, that is certainly, I just had the chief police on the first half hour, and we said, we are both for universal background checks, but what does that mean? Because if you're a registered gun dealer at a gun show, you've got to be registered. But if you sell a gun in the hallway or the parking lot, you don't. So the only way to enforce that would be to have somebody who knew the seller tell the police on the seller, which, you and I were dropped off a turnip truck a week ago, and that's kind of a tough deal there, right?
Well, in Chicago, I would talk with people in some of the neighborhoods on the south side who said every Friday night illegal guns would come in from Indiana on flatbed train cars, and people would just go and pick them up. I mean, there is a kind of, I would say, unholy sense of access to guns that is peculiar to our country, and for reasons not clear to me at all, that it's acceptable. In fact, it has become, you know, par for the course for us, though, as the BBC was laughing at the state of Delaware last week. In Delaware, apparently, you can buy a gun, carry a gun, do anything with a gun, but you can't buy sparklers.
Well, I'm just trying to think how we stop those flatbed trucks from going in from Indiana. Do we just have a roadblock? Or we? Again, I always have trouble when we try to put the pieces together on how to enforce that. You know.
Yeah. Well, some of them are coming in from Wisconsin, too, Mitch.
Wisconsin? So how do we stop that? We got to check every truck and then, you know, so you can't take more than two guns? I mean, I don't know.
Well, Australia's done a few things, though I'm not sure what they did, but they did turn some things around.
Things are better? Because I've heard crime in some cases is not less. It's even increased in some areas. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know the data, but I hear, you know, you hear things on all sides on that stuff. I'm all for it. If I could get every gun, I would, but I don't think you can, so.
Well, there are 270 million of them.
Yeah, well, good luck. Good luck. But I'll go with you to see if we can find those flatbed trucks and, you know, with a flashlight.
Well, I know where some of them are.
I'm sure you do, but what's the law? You'd have to make a law that you couldn't take guns across state lines? Is that what you do there?
Well, those are illegal access guns.
They're already breaking the law?
Yeah.
Oh, so then you got to enforce the law.
Well, yeah. Someone's got to be there to do it.
Yeah, right. Well,
when it's acceptable, or when we just resign ourselves and say, I'll pray in the quietness of the corner of my closet, but I won't get involved in the hard work of making our world safe, then, you know, you've resigned from the human race.
So we got to do some stings on those flatbed trucks. It's already illegal. All right. Well, there's action right there, Pastor.
Well, prayer and action have to be together. It's not one or the other, and you can tell both the liberals and conservatives that you better get your act together and learning what prayer is.
All right. Well, you're the man to do it. Pastor Blackwell, we thank you very much, and you do have an effect on me, so after about 1,000 interviews, maybe I'll show a little progress. So,
well, we'll have that lunch, and we'll see if you can make a comeback.
Well, I'm going to turn on my Osmond's record and have a have a glass of milk after this. So. Thank you very much, Reverend.
Okay, good night.
Appreciate it. Take care.